Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and this month marks the 30th anniversary of HIV/AIDS. 60 million people have been infected, 30 million have died from the disease. And while the medical and public health communities have made great strides in prevention and treatment, infection rates are trending up among young men who have sex with men, and disproportionately high among young African-American men. My next guest is trying to change that, and he's focusing on testing at bathhouses here in New York. He is Dr. Demeter Daskalakis, forgive me, director of the Bellevue NYU Men's Sexual Health Project and Project 3600. Doctor, welcome to WNYC, and please say your name correctly for us.
Thank you so much for having me. Demetri Daskalakis.
Thanks. That's what I get for not proofreading, practicing. So bathhouses are still a thing that didn't go out in the 80s?
Yeah, I mean, they still exist in New York City. There are a couple of venues that are still up and running, a couple of more traditional sex clubs, and then a sort of series of private parties that are a little bit harder to sort of see on the radar. They definitely did go out in the 80s temporarily, but have made a resurgence and have sort of been on the scene as a point of a lot of controversy. Looking at that sort of story of HIV, of AIDS in the 30-year history, they were pointed out pretty quickly at the beginning of the epidemic as sort of epidemiologically linked to the cases of immune dysfunction seen among gay men in New York and in L.A. At the very beginning of the epidemic. So they've been there's been a lot of controversy around them. They've been closed. Mayor Koch closed them. Then they came back. So definitely they're still on the scene, but they sort of then interact with the internet and other sort of social media that people use to meet sex partners.
So you go to bathhouses, you go to commercial sex venues.
Yes.
I've read the West Side Club, the East Side Club, Paddles. And what do you do?
Well, so we are a point of risk testing program. So very often we talk about point of care testing, where you go, you get your finger stuck with some blood and a rapid HIV test or whatever, for whatever condition it is, maybe even like a rapid glucose test is done at the point of care to see if you have a condition. And so I decided that it would be important to put that technology, rapid assessment of one's HIV status, really at the point of risk taking, where you may actually encounter people who may not go to traditional healthcare venues. So it started off with the idea that that really HIV prevention needs to dance with the devil and go a lot closer to the risk rather than be separate from it.
A big part of your work is Project 3600, and on your website it says you have 36 hours after unprotected sex to prevent HIV infection. Now, please explain this, because I think a lot of people have never heard about this 36-hour post-exposure window.
Which is exactly why we put up this Project 3600 program. So it's been guidelines at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention that after a high-risk exposure, one may start taking HIV medicines, even if they are HIV negative, within a certain time window, and that would prevent HIV infection. It's called post-exposure prophylaxis, sometimes called PEP. So it's been actually government federal guidelines and recommendations since 2006, but very few people know about it, primarily because it's difficult to access and because there's been, I think, some hesitance on the part of folks who hold the money in various venues to actually promote the idea that you can actually do something that prevents HIV.
If there are people listening at this moment who had unprotected sex within 36 hours and are afraid of their exposure status, what should they do right now?
Well, we're happy to help them. There are a couple of things they can do. They can dial our number, which I'm happy to share that. It's 646-501-5200. And I'll say it again, 646-501-5200. And that links them to a little questionnaire and then ultimately to me directly. And I discuss their exposure and decide with them if they meet the guidelines to start antiretroviral medicine to prevent HIV. Alternatively, they can also go to local emergency rooms. It tends to be a little bit more clunky, more time intensive, and also more cost intensive. So we really tried to build the program based on what the needs were of the people people that we thought were at the highest risk. So we based the design of the program on our needs assessment of some of the men that attend the commercial sex venues, and really designed it based on what they want. And you know, Elton John Foundation gave a small grant that has been extraordinarily generous in at least creating this pilot program.
And listeners, we have a link to Dr. Daskalakis's Project 3600 on our page. If you didn't get down that phone number and you want to get in touch, you can go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show and go through there. You use the term MSM, which
yes.
is not for mainstream media. MSM,
not.
Men who have sex with men. Are you
That's
explicitly
right.
not using the term gay?
Gay is a pretty politicized word, so a lot of the men that we'll encounter, actually up to 26% of them, do not identify as gay in any way. They identify themselves sometimes as heterosexual, bisexual, or actually prefer not to categorize themselves. So from the perspective of a bit of an epidemiologic term, it's a little bit more inclusive of the population that we encounter. And it's a pretty common term that the government uses in other epidemiological sort of surveys and groups.
So I said in the intro that infection rates among young men are trending up,
yeah.
and particularly among young black men. Is it that they aren't getting tested?
So I think that unfortunately HIV, like tuberculosis, is a disease that really finds a group of people that are socially the most at risk, and then sort of has their way with them, unfortunately. So I feel like there are a lot of things that happen in the MSM population that have to do with stigma, and if you overlap sort of racial issues as well as socioeconomic issues, it becomes really crushing all of the environment that creates sort of needs that may lead to further risk. So I think it's a complex question. I mean, definitely MSM, are the men who have sex with men, are the only risk category in the U.S., much less New York, the only risk category in the U.S. that have an increasing rate of HIV infection. And like you said, when you focus down and look, it's younger men who are of African-American or Latino descent, mainly African-American. So, I mean, we think it's a multifactorial issue that has to do with some institutional violence in effect, like racism, homophobia, in combination with a lot of stigma that I think drives a lot of behavior under the table and into the darkness. So I feel like that's one of the reasons that we do what we do. I mean, we go to the darkness. That's the whole point. Like, we go to where it's, you know, the highest risk to sort of say, you know, what you're doing, your behavior is what your behavior is. You either prevent HIV or you don't. And so I think that testing uptake is a part of it, and understanding of testing interactions and also preventative interventions may be the real block that's causing MSM rates to continue to climb.
My guest on WNYC, Dr. Dimitri Daskalakis, an expert in HIV prevention and treatment, as we continue our series on AIDS at 30 years old. Is there a generation gap in the fear of getting HIV? Have the medical and public health communities done such a good job of destigmatizing and treating HIV, at least in many people, that young men are no longer as afraid as they should be?
We're absolutely the victims of our own success. Absolutely. I mean, we have a lot of mixed messages. And our message is that HIV is a chronic, manageable disease. It's true. But at the same time, life is a lot better without. So I think that in my generation, I'm 37 years old, and I had a deleted generation of men ahead of me, people who didn't survive because of AIDS. So I was missing sort of a group of gay men or men who have sex with men that came before me. But these guys have people who they're seeing who are surviving and taking meds and doing okay. But just a little anecdote, today I had a patient come in from my Project 3600 who had started antiretroviral medicines to prevent HIV infection, and he actually said, he's a young guy in his mid-20s, he actually said to me, listen, all of my friends say if you get HIV, it's no big deal. You take a pill a day and you move on. And it's true. It's, you know, people do survive and do very well. But he looked at me and he said, I'm doing this post-exposure meds right now, and I don't like it. Like, I don't want to do this anymore. This is like the only time I'm going to do it. It's a preview to a movie. I never have to see the whole movie. And so I feel like definitely this optimism about treatment is a piece of it. We are a victim of our success in that way.
Right. But people also don't realize what that regimen is like. There was an op-ed in the New York Times on Sunday that was a good example of this by Mark Troutwine, an HIV-positive man who was infected back when being HIV positive seemed like a death sentence. Now it's decades later. He's still alive, obviously, but he takes 25 pills a day.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a walk in the park. I mean, definitely having, even now with a simple regimen, with a one pill once a day regimen, which is wonderful, if you're a 25-year-old African-American or Latino man or a white man and you do not have HIV infection, you bop along your life and you do what you need to do. You go to school, you have a job, you do whatever it is. With HIV on top of it, you all of a sudden have to go to the doctor every 3 months. You have the risk of some complications, though for the most part you don't have a lot. And you have to take a pill a day, which honestly is really hard to do considering that it's a lifetime intervention. At least right now it is.
You live this pandemic every day in your work. We're now 30 years in, and we hear about big advancements in terms of treatment, drugs that prevent transmission between partners, drugs that prevent transmission from mother to child. And there was that guy we did a show on last week who was essentially cured after a bone marrow transplant.
Yeah.
So from the front lines of this pandemic, how are you feeling about the future of the disease? Can we eradicate HIV in the near term?
I'm extraordinarily optimistic. I think that there are preventative interventions that can lead to near eradication. And so that includes aggressively putting people who are newly diagnosed with HIV on meds pretty quickly. Guidelines have said in the past certain T-cell counts will be what will gauge when one starts antiretroviral medicines. My prediction is that in the next cycle of guidelines are going to say if you have HIV, you should start meds, both from personal health and public health perspective. So with that alone, plus the dawn of preventative medicines like pre-exposure prophylaxis and post-exposure prophylaxis, which is using HIV medicines to prevent infection if you're negative. With vaccines on the horizon, we're working on a vaccine study right now, HVTN-505, that is just, you know, recruiting like crazy among men who have sex with men in New York, which is wonderful. You know, there's a lot going on. And I'll say that the thing that's really exciting is, I mean, in the time that I've been working in HIV, cure was a dirty word. You wouldn't really say the word cure of HIV because it was anathema. It's something that you think would never happen. It was almost something that you would mock. And now when you go to scientific meetings with the best and brightest immunologists and virologists in the country, the entire meeting is about cure. So I feel like eradication is on the horizon. The question is going to be when and how, but I think it's an energized issue now, and people are pursuing it in a way that they hadn't before.
Ending with some optimism about the future as we continue our series on AIDS at 30 years. Dr. Dimitri Daskalakis, expert in HIV prevention and treatment, working in New York City bathhouses and elsewhere. You can get to his program through ours. Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show to link through to him if you want some treatment for yourself or prevention for a loved one or whatever. Thank you so much for coming on with us.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.